As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello out there, we're on the air for the first time and not the third time. Of which we can blame ourselves equally now. But that's not what's happened. This is the first time we're speaking. I'm Eric Corrine of The Athletic. This is Jurassic Pod. On the other end of this digital communication is my friend, my pal, my colleague, the scribe extraordinaire, Holly McKenzie.
Oh, wow.
Holly, how are
Hi.
You?
I'm well. I'm kind of, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, everything's fine. We're doing well. We've made it through the first 40 seconds. Yeah.
We're doing great. No, actually, how am I not well? Because of the Raptors being down 0-2 to the Sixers. And I feel like the technical difficulties you and I were experiencing was sort of like the podcast version of the difficulties the Raptors were experiencing in the first two games against the Sixers. So
spiritually appropriate.
Yes.
I think
yes.
We can say. So yes, let's things are going great. since we last talked, my cat went blind. Shout out to Nico, who is now bumping into walls. It's like 2% cute and 98% very sad.
She's always 100% cute, though.
I know, but like her bumping into walls.
That is not cute.
Two bilateral detached retinas can happen with cats when they have high blood pressure. In case you wanted another thing to worry about. I mean, you don't have a cat, but bilateral detached retinas sounds bad, like an unpleasant thing. Also unpleasant, although in less life-impacting ways, I hope, for most people. the Raptors are playing poorly. Let's take it chronologically. Scotty Barnes sprains his ankle in the fourth quarter of a 131-111 loss. It happens as Joel Embiid steps on it. Let's just rule this out right now. Joel Embiid did not step on it purposefully. These things happen way too quickly for that to happen. Don't be ridiculous. If you want your complaints to be taken seriously, make serious complaints. But nonetheless, it looked like it really hurt, especially by Barnes' reaction. He's didn't play in game two, was in a walking boot. The vibes remain, pretty positive. At least when speaking to him, it appears. I'm not in Philadelphia as I continue to recover from COVID. But nonetheless, not great. Not great game one, as I mentioned, 20-point loss. Philadelphia completely outplays the Raptors in their own game. Transition and offensive rebounds, which is not what you expected.
You know it's bad when you say 20-point loss, and I'm like, no, it had to be more than that. Like a 20-point loss doesn't feel like enough of a gap to describe how awful that game one felt.
Yeah. Game two, a 15-point loss. Again, I would say that's slightly flattering to the Raptors. All in all, the Raptors are allowing, let's see if I can find it, 135.8 points per 100 possessions, which is not good.
Their game, in the playoffs!
Their game one defensive performance, I think according to John Schumann of NBA.com, over the last 25 years was either the third or fourth worst, or if you want to look at it positively, Philadelphia's offensive performance was either the third or fourth most efficient offensive performance. Also, we can say off the jump that Tyrese Maxey cannot be stopped. Gary Trent Jr. has been sick and ineffective. Thaddeus Young hyperextended his thumb on his first stint in game one and didn't play in the second half of game two. I think I've about covered it. Holly? Thoughts?
You know, not feeling as chipper as I was last week when we were debating and discussing.
Yeah, but I think it's important that you run down how your chipperness, but behind your chipperness some fears were lurking, right?
Yes. No, as we went through our thoughts about this series, I do distinctly remember saying to you, there was a moment, it may have been when I was talking about Maxey, where I said, ooh, I've said I'm afraid a lot. And then I thought, no, I think I'm still okay. I think I still feel good. The lesson here is to trust your instinct. If you feel afraid, maybe go with that.
I don't know if that's a great lesson.
I mean, it's good to trust your instincts, isn't it? Sometimes.
I think you could acknowledge your fears, but don't always let them win out.
We've taken this to a deeper place.
Yeah, no. I mean, we were going to get on our BS pretty quickly here, or I was at least. But yeah, like acknowledging your fears is important. I think you acknowledged them last week.
Don't let your fears rule you.
You chose optimism. I don't think that's ever a bad thing, except maybe the crush you and maybe like-minded Raptors fans are feeling right now is a bit more...
Intense
because you let optimism
that being
win out.
Said results aside, 0-2 hole aside, watching Scotty on the floor in pain was really difficult. That was awful. That was one of the, like, I think the last time I felt that terrible, like that sick feeling during a sporting event was in the finals when Kevin Durant was injured. Like, it's just, it sucks every, like, the air out of the room. It just makes you feel awful just because you just feel so bad. And like you said, we don't really know the extent of that injury. They're just saying it's an ankle sprain. He's in a walking boot. So good to see Scotty at the shoot around yesterday, kind of like with his smile on, you know, talking about how he was really scared, but, you know, he's feeling better every day. But I do think for Raptors fans, even beyond this series, I mean, definitely for me, beyond the series, is just, you don't want to see that. It was just devastating.
Yeah, I had a poorly worded tweet near the end of game one. That was something like, I've seen disappointing game one Raptors game ones before. This isn't that. And I certainly could have communicated that better. But what I meant by it was... okay, the Raptors didn't perform in game one. We're used to that. But part of the whole point of being in these playoffs, of this, you know, young team that was going to be an underdog regardless of their opponent in the first round series, was to get your young players some experience about what it's like to be in the playoffs, how it's different in the playoffs versus the regular season, how like individual matchups are different, how, you know, preparation is different, how crowds are different. And, you know, we can define young in any way we want to, like compared to us, all these guys are young, to get even more depressing. But, you know, the Raptors' best young player is Scotty Barnes. Mm-hmm. And so at the top of the list of reasons to be in the playoffs, other than, you know, the point of the NBA is to win, is to get Scottie Barnes specifically that experience. And, you know, if his playoff, if again, we don't know any more details than have been given, which is a sprained ankle in a walking boot, we'll see. He was ruled out on Tuesday morning after being, or Monday morning after being called doubtful on Sunday for game two. If all of the playoff experience he gets is, you know, however many minutes he played, the 30 or so minutes he played in game one, that is through nobody's fault, unless you want to argue that he shouldn't have been playing at that time, which I'm not going to argue, and I haven't really seen anybody argue. It's like a big organizational like beyond disappointment. It's a lost opportunity. Again, through nobody's fault, but that's sort of what I meant when I was saying this goes beyond disappointing.
It's deeper than just
This is a big, again, I'm going to repeat myself, a lost opportunity for the Raptors.
Yeah, no, devastating on many, many fronts. And I think especially with Scottie, just knowing what we've gotten to see from him this year, like his personality, his joy, his happiness, the exuberance he plays with, lives with, like the way he is in every interaction, it hits so hard to see him look scared. Like that was the worst part for me. And then that's not even mentioning, like you mentioned, the loss of him potentially if he doesn't come back. Having this experience, he was 2 assists shy of a triple double in his playoff debut. Like he had 15 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists and a block in his 32 minutes. He had 9 free throw attempts to lead the Raptors in that game. Like, one of the most exciting things in the NBA is seeing how a player will, you know, perform in their first postseason, let alone a rookie player. And to look at the season that he had, he came out and he did perform the way that I think we both kind of felt going into the series. Like, remember last week I said, like, I feel confident that they're not going to be too rattled. Well, there were a lot of bad things in game one, but Scottie looked great. And yeah.
I think if memory serves, I have the box score here. He was, you know, only a minus. I don't have the box score here. Great. I believe he was only a -9, which, you
minus
know,
-10.
So, like, considering where, you know, a lot of the other starters were -19, -19, -23, like,
yeah,
that lets you know that he was really impacting how things were going to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. And by no means do I think he was the most impactful player on the floor. I mean, you know, players 1, 2, and 3 and arguably 4 in that end are probably Sixers in this series up until that point, up to this point, rather. But yeah, you know, 15, 10, and 8, taking advantage of mismatches, looked great off the ball, wasn't a problem in terms of spacing. Like, frankly, the Raptors have scored well in this series. They're up at 115 points per 100 possessions, which is, you know, above their season mark by quite a bit. And that's without those transition opportunities that the, you know, have usually buoyed them. Or do you say buoyed or buoyed?
I think I say I don't know. I say it in my head. I never say that word out loud.
Okay.
Buoyed?
Yeah.
Buoyant? Something is buoyant.
Yeah, but...
So wouldn't it be
Okay.
I don't know.
That's been pronunciation.
Words!
That's been pronunciation talk with Eric and Holly. Yeah, he was excellent, and it would just... You know, he's certainly a... Much in the way that I sort of felt that Jonas Valanciunas was early in his Raptors tenure, like whenever Scottie Barnes does something great on the court, like he's certainly a big part of getting the crowd into the game. Mm-hmm. And so it would be a bummer not to see him play in Toronto. I'm not sure how many more ways we can dissect and discuss this one. That I think that is whatever happens the rest of the way, I would love to see Barnes somehow. I mean, not at the expense of his health, certainly, because his long-term health and his off-season are more important right now than this series. It's just the way it is. You don't want to jeopardize his health and the way he can, his runway to getting even better than he mm-hmm. currently is. Mm-hmm. Let's use that as an opportunity to talk about who has been the most impactful player. And I think despite what the numbers say, Maxey had 38 points and then 23. I think, Joel Embiid, as we expected, has defined the terms of terms of combat, terms of mm-hmm. competition in this series, to the point where Nick Nurse was talking about the officials before game one. He was talking about the officials after game one.
Before game two.
During game two with Joel Embiid, Nurse and Embiid delivered differing accounts of what that conversation was like. I mean, similar themes, but maybe a different tone involved in their retellings. What we thought has basically come to pass in that Embiid and how the Raptors try to deal with him was going to define this series, mm-hmm. and whether it has been over-fouling or collapsing too quickly, they just, haven't found a way to make him look consistently uncomfortable, and there's no obvious solution.
I think the answer was signing Marc Gasol before the postseason.
You'd rather have him than Armani Brooks on the roster.
I didn't name a replacement. I'm just
saying they signed somebody in between the trade deadline and we will not have Armani Brooks slander here, but we will not.
I think the thing for me, as frustrating as it is to watch Embiid shoot, what was it? I think it was 12 free throws in the first quarter.
Yeah, he's up to 25 free throws in the series. Mm-hmm. The Raptors, I believe, have shot 35 free throws in the series. So, and in game two, he outshot the Raptors by themselves.
Yeah, fantastic, isn't it?
it's really great.
If you're in Philly, it's fantastic. I think the thing that surprised me, I'm not surprised that Maxey has absolutely just given the Raptors fits, because we kind of know that his type of player the team has trouble with. I'm not surprised at that, because I think going in, especially last week, we did talk about that, like him being a player that scared us. What I am kind of surprised and impressed with, I'm sure that Raptors fans are dying to hear us talk about what we're impressed with the Sixers are doing.
Yeah, we'll just call it Sixers Appreciation Podcast.
But I am impressed with the way everyone on that team has been like so willing to step back and kind of just let him have that much of the spotlight, like he's on fire, so take it. The focus really has been him in a way. And I am impressed, and I think a little surprised, I guess, that James Harden has been so willing to kind of let the younger guy just go.
Yeah. And to get to Maxey, he has been like a big reason why the Raptors are losing those non-Embiid minutes, which, quite simply, they have to win in order to be competitive in these games.
And that was sort of the game in game two.
In game one, they lost the first half minutes by, I believe, without Embiid by about 4 points. In game two, that was 22-11.
And they were up at the end of the first quarter by two, right?
By one, yeah.
By one. And then, Embiid sat to start the second and, brutal.
And we can see why. Like, Fred VanVleet, for all his defensive gifts, and I think he's like a hugely impactful defensive player, it's, his strength isn't staying in front of mm-hmm. jitterbug point guards. It's sort of you know, he can defend above his size, and he knows when to like help inside. Those are his biggest strengths. And so your next option is Gary Trent. Well, he has the flu or some version of it, and has been a non-factor.
The extent to his illness, you know, we haven't heard from him, but he warmed up with a mask on, and there was one point where he was like running back on defense, and like when the camera like panned, like did a close up on him, you could see him breathing hard and slow. And I can't describe that except to say, I know when you're sick and you're kind of like, you just know that feeling where you're just laboring to breathe, to get air.
Right now, it's when I'm like going up two flights of stairs. That's what's happening.
Awful. And yeah, you take Gary out of it. You take Thad out of the game. Scotty's gone. Outside of just talking about Maxi, we really saw in game two, like, Fred didn't rest in that first half, and you could see it. Like, the difference in his first quarter, the strong first quarter he had, and then his shooting the rest of the game, his legs weren't there.
Yeah, he played the first 32 minutes of the game. I get it. And the Raptors relied on him and Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby to a comical degree back in January. And let's not forget, it got them a lot of the wins that allowed them to not only get to the playoffs, but avoid the play-in tournament too, which got, you know, Van Vliet his rest. But, you know, this is a thing, and I think this is where we can get into some, you know, reasonable criticism of how the Raptors have worked this season and managing the dual, you know, priorities of development and winning when they were hit by injuries and illnesses in this series. You're relying on Malachi Flynn, who played in fits and starts this year, was really only given extended run when absolutely necessary, when Van Vliet was out. And then he got injured quickly, which obviously hurts now. And he was expected, if not to carry the offense, to be a secondary offensive creator. And that just wasn't happening. And OG Anunoby, I think he looked much better in the second half of game two. But in the first half, I believe the numbers were 30 of the 47 shots that the Raptors took were by Van Vliet and Siakam. All 9 assists they had were by those two guys. And, I mean, yeah, you take out Scotty Barnes, you sort of expect that to happen because he's a key playmaker for them. But you need guys to be empowered throughout the regular season in order to step into those roles if they do present themselves. And I think whether you want to put that on the coaching staff, whether you say the front office didn't supply Nurse with the right sort of players in order to supplement Van Vliet, Siakam, and Anunoby in January, I think we can fairly say that that lack of opportunity for those players, we don't know if it would have made a difference, but they certainly didn't get those opportunities in a large enough degree to that we can fairly expect them to come up big in these situations.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's all fair. And I think it, like when you mentioned Scotty being out, of course, a lot more of the playmaking is going to come down to Pascal and Fred. In another way, that just shows the value of Scotty. You know, we talked a lot about like rookie of the year and, you know, whether that would be Mobley or whether that would be Scotty and, you know, but either opinion, I can totally understand why someone would pick either of those
players. I couldn't even see Cade Cunningham, but that's a conversation for not now.
I feel like the race kind of is down to those
two. No, I think one of those two will win, but like I totally get and respect the case for Cade Cunningham. But let's not get lost here.
But I just think without Scotty, and also Gary and Thad. But just talking about Scotty, you really saw it in that first half, both with the minutes that Fred had to play and just the way the offense was kind of just falling down to those two. I will say that the player that kind of made me not looking at plus minuses here, because those were just ugly for these two games. But I will say that I have been impressed with Precious. I feel like he, just to see, like you were talking about guys being in a position to be empowered to, you know, do things when they're on the floor. I do feel like we've seen stretches of that from him, both defensively, but also offensively as well. And that makes me happy for him. I feel like we need to talk about a couple positive things
because
it's been all doom and gloom. Also, Chris Boucher had like a really not good game one, and he had definitely the best performance.
Yeah, 17 and 10, I believe, in game two, including 6 offensive rebounds. Maybe it was 17 and 8.
17 and 8, 2 blocks, but he played 30 minutes and he was only a minus 1.
Yeah, it was a very recognizably both Chris Boucher performance and Raptory performance in general. Mm-hmm. Like, he looked like, it's almost like he is the, when he is going well, he is sort of what the Raptors look like. He's like a microcosm of what the Raptors are doing.
And especially during that stretch in the fourth where they went on that run and had that string of stops, like you really just saw, yeah, you saw a glimpse of the Raptors team that we've watched all year being annoying pests defensively, getting out and running and making things happen. And Chris was kind of in the middle of all of that. And I was, obviously it came too late and it didn't, you know, last to change the outcome of the game, but it was positive to see that, and it was really positive to see Chris being part of that, especially when you look at Thad only playing 8 minutes, and I don't know what he's going to be able to do coming forward, like going forward.
I think in general, to wrap up the previous conversation and move on to the next one, is the Raptors have put a lot of their, you know, assets or development or whatever you want to say, like, around defensive players who they're trying to develop on offense. And it's funny because the defense has been the problem, but when a team is executing to such a high degree as the Sixers are, and I believe the stat is, like, aside from Embiid and Harden, the Sixers are shooting 24 for 47 from 3 in this series.
Tobias, Danny, yeah.
Maxi, like Gorgeous, Niang, like they're all hitting, like they're all pretty much hitting their shots.
I feel like,
and like the Raptors,
Tobias has hit every single three he's taken. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, the Raptors are at I think 37 or 38% from 3 for the series, but like, if the other team's shooting 50% and from 3, and they're also, like, you know, beating
killing
you by
1.7
or 1.8 at the line, like,
yeah,
that's an impossible thing to make up. But
I don't like when you say when, impossible, because that doesn't make me feel great about
game 3. So I'll just say the Raptor, but this is, we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, as Nick Nurse said, Monday after the game, like, sometimes you don't want to do it, but sometimes you have to go basket for basket with the team. And you know, Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam were making all their shots at the beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. It was a 65-point quarter when combining both teams. When they stopped making all their shots, you know, it was problematic. And that can't be the recipe. So where do we go from here, Holly?
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm going back to Toronto.
Game three.
Said the great Kawhi Leonard, who, wow, it would be nice to have Kawhi Leonard and Marc Gasol. We mentioned Mark. Hey, let's just bring back Kawhi, too. So game three in Toronto on Wednesday. Game four will be on Saturday. They'll actually get 2 days in between. We don't know.
If they're down 3-0, color me disappointed that there are two games in between those games.
We don't know who will be available. Certainly hope that Gary is feeling much better for his sake as well as the team's. Yeah.
So let me provide these two glimmers of hope.
Please, I need them. Yeah. I need all of them.
If you were to list some things that tend to be more dependent on home court advantage, I would say high up on those lists, that list would be one, role player 3-point shooting, and two, the whistle. So
I hate even mentioning the whistle.
I don't like mentioning
series.
It too, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, that's very fair.
I haven't done a deep dive study, but you know, I can see how the fans might impact the refs a little bit because they're humans, just like the rest of us. That's right. That isn't a gripe about the officials in this series. I think. To get the conversation out of the way.
Here we go, Eric.
No. I'm just going to say, I think at times, I don't think it's been egregious. I think it's been more or less fair. At times, you could say that the standard being held at one end hasn't been exactly the same at the other end. But I think also, like, look at maybe the two biggest fouls of this series were Fred VanVleet's second foul in game one, which was absolutely a foul underneath on Joel Embiid after giving up an offensive rebound, maybe two offensive rebounds, actually. And the second was OG Anunoby's second foul, which was reaching in on James Harden in the situation where you know what James Harden's going to do with five on the clock behind the three-point arc. He's going to try to, you know, rip through and draw that foul. And whatever you
what
think of
you
it.
What did you think of Pascal's second in game two?
Oh, that was a bad call, I thought.
I felt like that kind of riled everybody up from the jump. And then,
I'm just saying that the Raptors in general are not without fault in putting themselves in that position. And as Fred VanVleet said, let me find the exact quote so I am not paraphrasing him. Found it. I think we did a pretty good job with their physicality. But at a certain point, we have to stop arguing with the refs and find another solution because they're not budging. I liked our physicality and our intensity, and we showed more bodies, and we seemed to be in the right spots on some of the doubles and things like that. We'll have to find a way to get our hands out of there. So
I do always appreciate that Fred is just matter of fact and is like, "All right, well, this is what we've got to work with. Let's go."
Like he's clearly not happy about it. About the way it's being called, and I don't think you know, as much as fans feel it, the players are right in there. So they feel it more acutely. But at some point, you have to deal with the reality of it. And Nick Nurse is doing his thing and doing the campaigning that all coaches do publicly to get the refs aware, you know, maybe heighten their awareness, let's say, of certain situations, which is certainly, I have no idea what he actually thinks about those foul calls. He's just doing his job in trying to get the refs to see things in advantageous ways for the Raptors. But I don't think the Raptors can look at the refs and say that's the reason we're down 0-2. Some of those calls have come at unfortunate times, but if you're, you know, flimsy enough to be, you know, blown away when those bad calls happen, you don't really get the benefit of the doubt there. And they have been thoroughly outclassed, but we've got away from the positivity, Holly, which is that I think those two things are not insane things to swing as a series switches locations.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And also just being home in front of your fans, let's see what happens.
First
Why
home,
do you sound more positive than I do?
First home playoff game since game five. Speaking of, you mentioned the Kevin Durant injury. There hasn't been a home playoff game in Scotiabank Arena since game five, which I still think is like the most dramatic basketball game
for sure
I've ever seen live. Like, even beyond
the ending of that, it was like, oh my gosh, they could win the championship right here versus, yeah. Okay, no, back to, like, just the swings emotion.
But even, like, from minute one to minute 48, it's like, what do the Warriors look like with Kevin Durant? Oh my God, they're unstoppable. Oh no, what just happened to Kevin Durant? Why, and then, like, between the Durant injury... Oh. It was just like, oh, the Warriors are showing a lot of fight. They're keeping the Raptors at arm's length. And then they finally get over the hump, only to be like the Warriors to have their one final great push of that series. And that, I think the Warriors era is still going on to an extent, but like certainly that run
that
of things.
Version of it, yeah.
Like that game, in terms of drama, I'm not saying like quality, but in terms of pure drama, I think it's the most dramatic game I've ever seen. And that was the last time there was a home game at Scotiabank Arena in the playoffs.
And this is why no one can keep track of years, months, or days, because that was 2019 and here we are in 2022. And wow, the Raptors team is a different team than that one.
Yep. Three Raptors in that series will be on the floor
That's crazy.
Wednesday, and one of them will be playing for Philadelphia in Danny Green. OG Anunoby was on the Raptors in that series,
he just
but
wasn't
obviously not playing.
On the floor, yeah.
You want to talk about James Harden and what he's done in this series? No? Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, again, I've been impressed that he's kind of been content to let Maxey do his thing and I mean, obviously, he's still been very good and effective, but I think that the Raptors may be giving him too much credit right now, defensively. Thoughts?
You mean in terms of their schemes and
yeah.
The attention they're throwing his way? Well,
and everybody else on the team is shooting, like, I forget the number that you said, but
24
they're not missing
47 from three. Yeah.
They're not missing their threes. I kind of feel like I would focus on that a little bit more. And, you know, if Harden starts going off and gets hot or gets loose, then sure, like, adjust. But I don't know if I would be paying him the priority of defense on
him. So Harden for the series is shooting just nine for 26. In the series from the field, he's gotten to the line 15 times, 20 assists to 6 turnovers. There is a certain degree to which the Raptors should probably stay home a bit more. Mm. But I also think, like, we're probably oversimplifying this. And, like, Harden is a great, smart basketball player. And the Raptors, in general, are a team that cuts off the paint, and it's easy to say, okay, send less help. But then what does that look like in terms of Harden getting right to the rim as opposed to getting into that floater range, which I think they're okay with. So,
ultimately the problem here is that the Sixers are doing all of the things well, like really well, that, you know, you going into the series, I think you would have picked one or two of the things to be happening really well for them. They're doing everything great. So,
yeah, here we are. So Harden's been, despite the shooting percentages, I think he's been very good and certainly a great organizer. And I think, the biggest impact is probably how he's sparking their transition offense. So a lot of those 20 assists have come in transition, and that's without the Raptors turning the ball over a ton. It was 8 times in game 1, 9 times in game 2. They're being responsible with the ball, and it's not mattering. So I think we talked about it a bit earlier. If you were to give me like one stat in this series that's like, oh my God, how is this happening? If you told me before the series and gave me it now, I like would have got the most reaction out of me, the most surprise out of me. It's the 51-20 fast break advantage
for sure
that the Sixers have through 2 games. Before game 2, I asked Nick Nurse about it. I asked whether he thought it was because the Raptors are an offensive rebounded minded team and were perhaps crashing a bit too much, not in the right spots. He didn't sound willing. First of all, he wasn't attributing the transition defense to the offensive rebounding attempts. And I doubt he will be willing to sacrifice those attempts in order to prioritize transition defense to that degree. So is there a correction here for the Raptors other than do it better? which seems to be what Nick Nurse's answer is going to be. And I'm not trying to make...
No.
I'm not trying to belittle that, but because that's who the Raptors are to a degree. But is there like a strategic change that you would like to see, or are you in the Nurse school of, you know, let's be better?
Well, this is where it's tough for me, because I feel like going into game 3, a lot of this is going to depend on Gary having one of your best defenders available or not available is, you know, a big question to have up in the air. Obviously, I do not think that we will see Scotty in game 3.
I'd be surprised too, yeah. But stranger things have happened,
but that's not even on my list of like, this could happen. Like I've just mentally kind of assumed that Scotty will not be there. With Gary, I just really think that he could help a lot if he's there. And I think one of the biggest things coming into the series that we talked about was like the Raptors needing to be the Raptors, like needing to be that like aggressive, scrappy, annoying defensive team that causes turnovers, that, you know, is harassing you defensively, that's getting out and running, all of those things that they haven't done. I don't know if they're able to do that to the extent that I want them to if Gary's not available, and that is a little concerning to me.
This is a team.
And then also, if you're in foul trouble, you're naturally not going to be able to be as aggressive as you want to be. But like you said, they will be home, so maybe that will work in their favor a little more. I don't know. What do you think?
I think they need to get but down by more to start. Because if you remember in their last 2 wins over Philadelphia in the regular season,
17-2, they got down. That's what you want to see.
17-2 and 26-12 in those games. So they need to.
You are saying you
don't take any fouls and just
get
down by a lot.
Are you
going to
be at the game?
That's the plan. Knock on wood.
So you're saying if you're in the arena, you want to experience Scotiabank Arena crowd.
Yeah, just completely deflated.
Their first playoff game since game 5, looking at a 17-2 score with the team down 0-2. You are a sick human.
I am.
To want still, that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Literally.
I've been talking about it.
Figuratively.
No,
there's nothing that.
I do not want that, but I'm of course.
I get what you're saying.
They do. Yeah, I don't think there's a ton of, in that specific way, I don't think there's a ton of strategic things to do.
Like, it's frustrating to it's frustrating to be in this position and then hear the coach say you just have to do it better. But sometimes that's what you've got.
I mean, they've built this team's identity all year long to play this way, and they're not playing this way. And I think that has a lot to do with the opponent. I don't think we can just say the Raptors are playing poorly. I think they're trying to impose their will, and they've met a team that so far has been able to overcome that and impose their will on the Raptors.
I do have to say, it's wild to me to see how different this Sixers team looks than the one that we've seen throughout the regular season. Just in terms of, like, hitting everything just right. Like, it just, yeah.
Yeah, they've been great.
They're really impressive. Like, they have impressed me. I'm saying impressive again against the Sixers. Sorry to...
No, they've been great.
Yeah.
They deserve the credit here. They are, you know, it's a matchup of two different philosophies and two different wills. And, you know, you can probably chalk it up first and foremost to the overwhelming talent of Embiid, but also... Mm-hmm. You know, Maxey has been just a huge factor in getting
incredible
going in other ways. And, you know, in another world, you hope that, not that they're the same player, they are not, but you hope that Gary Trent is having that type of series. Like, we saw him score 40 a few times this year. He's certainly capable of 30-point games. And he's, for obvious reasons, hasn't been able to be that. And... for a long time now, the Raptors have devoted a large portion of their bench to young players who they're hell-bent on developing. And right now, the development isn't to a point where they can supplement or fill in when there are injuries. And
so
this is the result.
So I do have a question about last game for you. The stretch in the fourth where they went on that run and they had like consecutive stops. I forget how many stops. I think it was like 7 in a row or something
like that, yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't change the outcome of the game, but do you think there's anything from that that can, I don't want to say carry over because in the playoffs, each game is individual, but do you think that that is something that, apologies. Do you think that that is something that can... affect the next game, or that can show the Raptors that they've unlocked something or that they still have it? Like, where does that factor in for you when you're
I'm not a big believer in momentum in any way, which is, but in a playoff series, mostly because the last time these two teams played, like, one game had nothing to do with the next game, pretty much,
right?
In a playoff series, but I do think what it does, you hit on it in the last part of your question, is the Raptors can still play the way they want to and impact Philadelphia defensively. And they were forcing Embiid into some awkward shots. He made a few of them. He didn't make, you know, he went 9-for-16. That's not like setting the world on fire. So if you can, again, big if you could limit the fouling, then you're holding Embiid to, you know, something livable. Harden is looking for a call every time he's in the paint. Like, when he doesn't get it, he's looking right at the ref. That's his first reaction 3 out of 4 times. And yeah, it's annoying.
I do have to say, you mentioned the differing accounts of the conversation between Nick Nurse and Joel Embiid. I'm going to focus on Joel's version right now just for a moment. Now, Joel said he told him to stop bitching about calls. That was his quote. I'm sure you've seen the clip of
Joel told Nick to stop
bitching about calls.
Yeah.
That is rich coming from Joel Embiid. Okay? Like, I just have to say that because you talk about Harden looking at the officials. Joel, it's not like Joel doesn't also look at the officials. So I thought that was funny. If Joel Embiid said that to me, I probably would be like, what? Like, you're the one that's saying that to me? So I just had to say that. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah, I mean, there's a long line of big men who, no matter how often how often they get to the free throw line, they think it's probably half as much as
that's not a criticism. It's just like,
yeah, when he doesn't get the call, he is often looking at the ref. I didn't think it was that bad on in game two. I thought it was pretty noticeable in game one, but I think we're getting off topic a little bit. But yeah, that is a bit humorous, if you want to find humor in this situation.
Listen, I need humor. I need good vibes. I need positivity.
Yeah, but you know, back to your point, I think like or your question, I think that the Raptors showed, and yeah, maybe Philadelphia let the foot off the gas, but if this is turned into a half-court series, like even if they're not turning over the Sixers as much as they would like, and you certainly want to get those numbers up, and they were up, certainly compared to up to 14 from 4 in game yeah. 1 to game 2. But even if they can't get those turnover numbers up to the levels the Raptors would like, they have ways to slow down the machine. Some of those minutes came with Embiid on, some of them came mm-hmm. with them off. And so I think that, as Nick Nurse said, like that should, you know, judging on the way they played down the stretch, they haven't lost belief. And as long as you have that, you have, you know, I think they're deserved underdogs the rest of the way. But you have something more than a chance, because this isn't an untalented team. Like, they've shown they can find many ways to win. It's different in the playoffs for sure. But I think if anything's going to carry over, it's that sort of belief more than mm-hmm. a strategy or vibes or whatever. It's just, we know when we do this well, we have a chance of slowing them down. And after the first 7 or 6.5 quarters, you probably couldn't think that.
No, yeah, for sure. And I think also, I know we mentioned Kawhi and his "I'm going to game 3" quote earlier in the
Toronto pod. Game 3.
Earlier in the podcast. But I do think it helps when you do have Pascal, Fred, OG, who've been in situations where you've had to come home and quickly turn things around, you know?
Perhaps a little too...
How are you feeling about your prediction?
Raptors or Sixers in 7? I'm not feeling good about it. I feel good about, you know, the Sixers part.
In 7? Yeah.
No, well, not in 7. I feel good about the Sixers part. Yeah. You know, if I had to bet right now, I'd say Sixers in 5, but we'll see. I still don't think it's impossible that the Raptors come back and take these two games at home, but like a lot of things are going to have to change. Probably, you know, a few too many things are going to have to change for me to not alter that prediction. Is sort of how I feel.
Well, I said Raptors in 6.
Well, the not the last time, but the previous time before that they went down 0-2 series, the Raptor 0-2 in a series, the Raptors did win in 6. So,
but I will say that my Raptors in 6 featured Scotty heavily. So
yeah, want to do a quick Jays talk before we say goodbye?
Sure.
How you feeling? How much have you seen?
I've seen quite a bit, actually. Yeah. Just because they're on every night.
God, I love
like,
it.
Literally, God, like 20 days in a row.
Love it.
I've seen
so
quite
much.
A bit. Feeling pretty good. God, I just love the team. I just love them, you know?
It's so sad about Smiley Teoscar going down early in the season.
That was
at least
really
it doesn't. It doesn't. I was sort of yelling at my TV while he grimaced after the first pitch. I was like, Charlie Montoya, go out there, go talk to him, don't let him swing the bat. And like, I have no idea if like the swing he did take made it worse or not.
Right.
And they're saying that the oblique strain he has is not as bad as the one that Danny Jansen has, which is another problem. But God, that sucks, because you know you want your hitters to be as protected as possible in a lineup, but in general, you know, we're still waiting to see the offense come out fully. I would say we're still waiting to see the rotation settle in and Ryu's start, and then placement on the injured list is disappointing. But They're where they need to be. And oh my God, do I hate games at Fenway Park, which is where the Raptors are next. Or the Jays are next.
I think I want a Jordan Romano jersey. I've never had a baseball jersey. I'm definitely too old for one, but awesome.
I currently own an Eric Corine Jays jersey. I did not buy it.
My brother
bought it for myself. And I very much wanted another player.
My brother bought it for myself. For you? Your brother bought it for
you? Yeah, correct. That's English. Okay. And then that player turned out
to be awful.
We don't need to go further into that. So, like, I was initially annoyed at my brother, but shout out to Mike Corine. Good decision. Never bet, you know, as Fred Van Vliet says, bet on yourself because you can be reasonably sure about the things you will do in or won't do in life. And we don't know these players very well as much as we'd like to say. So
did you see the clip of Bo hugging Vladdy?
I did. Yeah.
Oh, dream team. Love them.
Want to see the pitcher start to shut some Red Sox down, but it's a decent start. That's what I'll say. That's our Jays talk. That's our Raptors talk. Any other final thoughts, Holly?
We're going to have a Grand Prix this week.
Where is it?
It's in Italy, I think.
Okay.
I think it's like one of two or three. See, I'm not good yet with the schedule and the stops. Are you looking this up for me?
I'm looking it up. You keep talking. You monologue.
That would be helpful if you do. And my favorite player. See, I'm not used to other sports. My favorite driver has a substantial lead in the standings, which is really fun. Charles Leclerc.
The Rolex Emilia Romagna Grand Prix.
I love how awful we sound pronouncing these beautiful.
And there is an Italian. Yeah. There is an Italian flag next to it, so I can only assume that means it's in Italy.
Yeah, I feel like there's like three different stops in Italy.
It's in Rome. that is where it is.
Someone's gonna message me and tell me that I'm horribly uninformed, and I do apologize because I am.
I mean, you are, and I am even more so. So we're not pretending to be experts.
But yeah, Australian Grand Prix was really fun. Loved the time of it. It was like perfect midnight time for me. It's just crazy to me watching these races how quickly and how easily it can all just come apart, like with an engine failure or a crash or going off the track or the tires aren't ready, or like, it's just crazy to me how you can put this much work and effort and like emotion and energy into it, and then your like hopes can just be dashed like 30 seconds in. Like, that's crazy to me that happens. And again, I'm pretty new to this, so I don't know if this is like common, but it just feels like the races that I have watched, like, there's usually almost always like 1, 2, 3 like yellow red flags coming out and like cars having to be moved off, and it's just like, damn, like, that's crazy to me.
I think that's pretty normal, but I haven't watched in a while.
I think you should start. I think we need to get you on the Drive to Survive bandwagon first, and then you need to jump in to the full thing. I think I'm going to buy the actual Formula One TV pack where you can watch it on your phone or laptop, and you can watch it live and have the driver cams and radios. I think I'm doing it. Wow. I know. I think I'm really in.
So are you all in on Leclerc? Is it Leclerc or Leclerc?
Well, it depends on if you're
How do you pronounce it?
I say Leclerc, but I mean, I don't say it with a crazy, beautiful accent.
Yeah.
But he has said he's fine with people saying whatever they want.
Don't care what you call me, just call me something nice.
I think he's delightful. And I didn't think that he would get out to the start that he has. But yeah, he's been great. Ferrari has had a really great start.
My boy Verstappen won the other race. I've just heard he's a bit of a insane malcontent. So
that's why
I've called him my boy, despite knowing
his competitiveness is insane. It kind of reminds me of like Chris Paul. You know how Chris Paul is like a completely different person when he's competing, and it's just like he's almost kind of scary.
Yeah.
Like just so competitive and obsessed. Yeah, kind of like that. Last race was terrible. Like he, yeah, they, yeah, it was not a good race for him. But also, I really love Haas because I love their principal. I think that's the term.
Sure.
Gunther. He's like my favorite character in this whole ecosystem. Character, I'm saying that with air quotes. He's just hilarious, and you'll see him if you watch the show. You'll see a lot that he's just like delightful. And I think they went like last season, maybe two seasons, without any points, and they have points this year already, so that's like really exciting.
It's funny you mentioned Gunther, because in the WWE they changed a famously European wrestler's name from Walter, which, you know, obviously went over big with me, to Gunther because it sounded more like foreign and heelish, because that's the level of maturity we're dealing with here.
Oh, dear.
And so now it's Gunther, the ring general. I think that about wraps up our conversation in terms of where we need to go.
See how much happier I was talking about this as opposed to the actual content of our pod, because yeah. Eric, I'm stressed.
Yeah, well, the good news is maybe I'll have a lot of time to watch Drive to Survive coming up.
Do not
or
say
maybe
that.
Maybe that's bad news. Holly, anything you want to shout out in terms of your work? No?
Okay.
Well, just good vibes. Good vibes all around.
Good vibes in Toronto. We're back in Toronto for Game 3.
Yeah, to the fans going, get there on time, have fun.
Be loud.
Yeah, it's been a while, so soak it in, because these games, who was it who tweeted it last night? Josh Hart tweeted, not being in the playoffs is ass. let's, even though these two games have gone as poorly as we can imagine, pretty much, enjoy it, because it's easy to take these for granted, especially when the Raptors are on the, you know, run of success that they're in, but some teams, Sacramento Kings, go a decade and a half without them. So with that in mind, Holly, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, listeners. And we will come to you probably after Game 4, I'm guessing. Until then, stay safe, enjoy the basketball, and we'll talk to you soon. See ya!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.